97.5 Glory FM is your radio station for the information you need for you and your family and the most positive music in North Georgia. Tom, once again, for Community Focus, our public affairs program, and we're highlighting the upcoming May 21st primary election. Early voting continues today through the upcoming deadline there of Friday the 17th, getting ready for Tuesday, May 21st. And joining me this morning is one of the candidates looking to become Superior Court Judge. Judge Michelle Hall is joining us. Great to have you with us, ma'am. Appreciate you being with us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
All right, let's talk about Michelle Hall, please, for those who don't know you.
So I am not a native to Hall County, but almost. I've been here for 23 years. I came here while I was still in law school at Georgia State. I've lived in Georgia my entire life, but I was originally born in Carrollton. And went to West Georgia College, graduated from there, and then went to Georgia State for law school. I started here in the Hall County Solicitor's Office in 2003 under Jerry Riley. Worked there for 3 years until I went into private practice. I had my own law firm on Thompson Bridge Road in Coleman and Chambers Building for 16 years. For 11 of those years, I was the judge in Flower Branch Municipal Court. For the last 2 years that I was in private practice, I was a part-time magistrate court judge here in Hall County. Then I went full-time in January of 2022. And since then, I've been sitting in magistrate court and in superior court on a regular basis.
All right. For me, I told her I'm a constituent. I'm a potential voter. I'm going to ask a question about why I should vote for Judge Hall here. Describe to me the differences, for those who don't understand, the levels of the different courts we have here. Describe to me the difference between magistrate court, state court, and superior court.
Sure. Magistrate court, we do all arrest warrants. Anything that you have to be arrested on a warrant, not a citation, then we issue those. We also do search warrants for property, phone records, bank records, those kinds of things. There's certain search warrants that have to be done by a superior court judge, and sometimes we're designated to do that as a magistrate court judge. We also do evictions, civil trials up to $15,000. We're not a court of equity, so we can only order a judgment. We can't, like, order someone to stop doing something, but we can give you money for damages. In state court, they handle misdemeanors, so it's anything that you can get up to a year in jail, and then anything civil cases, so they don't have any jurisdictional limit in regards to the amount. And then Superior Court handles all felony cases, so it's anything you can go to jail for more than a year on. We do domestic cases, so divorces, child custody cases, adoptions, legitimations, those kinds of things. Those are the major differences.
All right, so now I understand also, so for Superior Court, is not only in Hall County, but also in Dawson County.
That's correct. Superior Court is the only court in Hall County and Dawson County that runs in the circuit. All the rest of the judges and levels of courts are only in each county.
All right. So then, for example, for our listeners in Dawson County, we're a member of the Chamber of Commerce in Dawson County also.
Yes.
With a large audience there. So if I'm in Dawson County, if I have a court case, would it be coming over here to our courthouse, or is there something in Dawson County would serve?
No, there's a Dawson County courthouse, so we actually drive to that courthouse instead of presiding over here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in an emergency situation, we can handle it in either courthouse in the circuit, but generally we handle it in the county in which it happened.
That's what I was wondering about Superior Court, the difference is if you would serve over there. That's good to know from that standpoint.
Yes.
As we talked to Judge Michelle Hall this morning about her campaign for Superior Court Judge here on 97.5 Glory FM. So if you would talk about the type of cases and what you had to do to litigate those cases when it comes to dealing with the lawyers and with the cases and that kind of thing.
Sure. So on the criminal side, we handle all felony cases. So those are your murders, child molestations, any kind of theft case that's over $1,500, forgeries, those kinds of things. It's the worst of the worst kind of stuff that you hear that nobody wants to be a victim of and nobody really wants to hear. But I believe that I'm prepared for those kinds of things because I represented abused and neglected children in juvenile court for 16 years. And so I've already heard a lot of those really bad stories because I represented those kids who were victims of that. In regards to the domestic cases, there's a thing called a guardian ad litem, which is either a non-lawyer who's got training or a lawyer who is qualified to do the work, where the court appoints them to say, you do an investigation into the child's circumstances, such as in an adoption case or a divorce case or a child custody case where you do an investigation into the child's circumstances and you make a recommendation to the court as to what you believe is in the child's best interest. I don't know how many times I was appointed to do that. Hundreds is the number I'm going to say, because I did that for 15 years. I think that better prepares me for sitting in Superior Court, because realistically, about 50% of that job is the domestic calendar. So it's divorces, child custody cases. I've been doing that now as a judge in Superior Court by designation for the last 3 years. And so I've already had the opportunity to have cases where a 9-year-old child comes in to tell me which parent they want to live with. And I have the experience to see whether or not that child's been coached to say something, or you know, that daddy wants them to tell the judge something that mama doesn't want them to know, and that kind of thing. I have all that experience. That's the reason why I'm running.
That's my next question about going back, Ruth, really, why you want to be a Superior Court judge with the background you've had so far, the different courts you've served in.
Well, I think that my career's pushed me towards this. But, you know, it's funny because I always thought I wanted to be a Superior Court judge, and I've tried to get that job, and I wasn't successful. And, you know, they say you make your plans and you hear God laughing. And I think that's happened in my life. He's pushed me, in my opinion, towards the Superior Court because that's where I'm more comfortable. We have a great bar and a great bench in Superior Court. Our Superior Court bench is one of the best ones in the state. We have multiple accountability courts. Every single one of them is a model court for the state, which means that other jurisdictions come and watch our court to see how they do it. So that way they can go back and take the things that we've learned and we've implemented and go back and do those. I got appointed this January to handle parental accountability court as a Superior Court judge. That's a court where individuals who have gotten behind on their child support, they come and talk to me every 2 weeks on average, it's twice a month. And they're accountable to me to say why they're not paying their child support. It's a partnership court with child support enforcement. My court administrator in that court is actually a child support enforcement employee. So she monitors whether or not they're paying and all those kinds of things. But what we try to do in that, we have two options. If you're behind on your child support, I can either put you in jail, which really doesn't help you at all. It mm-hmm. doesn't help the child because the child's not being supported. Or I can try to fix whatever the barrier is to you paying your child support. So that's what we do through that program. If it's job skills, then we provide them job skills. If it's housing resources that they need, then we refer them to those. If they need substance abuse treatment, then we refer them to that. We also drug screen all of our participants. If it's something like mental health treatment that they need, then we refer them to places like Avita and things of that nature where they can get those services in a discounted kind of way, so that way they can afford that. We've had some great successes in that program. Judge Oliver was the first judge who started that program here in Hall County in 2011. Since that time, as of December of last year, that program collected $1.6 million in child support. That's a win. Those mm-hmm. are people who were productive people and not sitting in jail with their children not being supported.
We're talking to Judge Michelle Hall this morning, who's looking to become Superior Court judge here in the Hall and Dawson County area this morning, talking on Community Focus, our public affairs program. Judge, I've already had people who've asked me this question. Why do I have to go vote for a judge? And they don't understand the process, and also why it's a nonpartisan election too.
So you can get to be a judge in two ways. One, if a judge leaves in the middle of their term, then that's a judicial or that's an appointment process through the governor. Mm-hmm. So you have to interview with the Judicial Nominating Commission, and then they put together a short list of people they recommend for the governor to interview. The governor can interview anybody that they want to, but typically the JNC is the one who recommends those people, and then the governor will interview those people and then pick from there. If a judge decides not to run, then that, like in this case, Judge Goslin has decided to retire. She was our first female elected state court judge, then our first female elected Superior Court judge, then our first female chief Superior Court judge here in Hall County and Dawson County. And she's decided to retire after 38 years, leaving her seat open. So then, just like the rest of the elected officials who are left open, then that goes to the public. And so then the voters get to decide who their judge wants to be or who they want them to be. And it's nonpartisan because politics doesn't belong in the courtroom. We have to follow the law whether we like it or not. The Constitution is the highest law of our land, and everything has to add up to that. If it doesn't, then it has to fail.
How rare is this event to have an election for a Superior Court judge?
The last contested election for a Superior Court judge, I think, oh my goodness, was before I started practicing here, and I started practicing here in 2003. Mm-hmm. The last contested election for state court was in 2016.
It's been a long time from that standpoint. So when we talk about this position, are there more than one seat when it comes to Superior Court, or is this the only one?
There are five Superior Court judges in our circuit. Only one position currently is contested. There are two other Superior Court judges that are running this year unopposed. That's Judge Oliver and Judge Bearden.
So you want to run for a vacant seat, right? That's why you're running for
this
one?
That's correct, yes.
As we talked to Michelle Hall, a judge who's looking for her seat on Superior Court here in the Hall and Dawson County area. We talked to her this morning on Community Focus. You can go to our website later on at WGTJradio.com. Click on the Community Focus button. It goes to our Community Focus page. You get a chance to hear her interview later on as we bring you the information you need here, looking forward to the upcoming May 21st election. I have learned so much about the duties of what goes on in the courts. This is one of those top things that, you know, for someone like me, you never want to go before you from that standpoint. You talked about working with the families. How close did you work with CASA when it comes to families in Hall and Dawson County?
I worked very closely with CASA for that entire 15 to 16 years that I practiced in juvenile court. I was a guardian ad litem, which is what CASA is. CASA generally is non-lawyer guardian ad litems, but sometimes if CASA couldn't assign a volunteer to one of the cases, or if the case was a little more complicated, then the court would appoint an attorney guardian ad litem. That was one of my primary responsibilities. I was a child attorney and guardian ad litem for, I think, 14 years there. And so CASA is a great organization. It's funny, on the campaign trail, I've recommended that people go and volunteer there who are retired and looking for things to do. And especially I talk to a lot of retired teachers that are like, you know, I really miss dealing with kids. Well, you should go and be a CASA, because CASAs get to go and meet that child. And a lot of times the CASA is the one person that's with that child for their entire case, because juvenile court cases can last for years. And so it's really cool to see the relationship that is built with the child and the guardian ad litem, who's generally a CASA, but sometimes a lawyer. But you know, a lot of times, just like anything, DFACS has a lot of turnover and things of that nature. You might go through multiple caseworkers, but mm-hmm. generally your CASA is the same one through your entire case.
And that's great. This time, long time friend, Connie Stevens.
Yes.
Worked with that organization, was executive director, and they did a fabulous job with that organization.
Yes. Connie was there when I first started working with CASA, and I miss her greatly.
Who's the director now? Do you know?
Oh, my goodness. You put me on the spot.
As you, the hard question.
She came from CSU, and I'm going to have to apologize to her because I cannot remember her name right now.
What's a great, you're going to go from CSU to that? That's a big step from that standpoint. It really is.
Absolutely. She has all the experience, and she's doing a great job already.
How important is their role in working with the cases that would come before the Superior Court?
So CASA doesn't serve in Superior Court. They only serve in juvenile court.
Okay, but I thought they might be working with the lawyers, going that kind of thing. Okay, I'm with you. Okay.
Now, we have attorney guardian ad litems, and then non-attorney and guardian ad litems that handle cases in divorces and child custody cases. Those are appointed through Superior Court, but CASA doesn't actually appear there. Now, a lot of times, if a CASA is assigned to a child who's been like a victim of a crime, then that CASA will go with them to court if they have to testify and things like that. So they do that as a support role, but they don't really talk to the court about anything.
Just curious from the standpoint, we've had so many problems with divorces and with children being the innocent victims of these things. What is the age now that a child can say, I want to live with this parent or that parent?
So now at the age of 11, the child has the right to voice their opinion to the court. At the age of 14, it used to be an absolute right where the child said, I want to live with mom or dad, and that's what the court had to go with. Now the court still has to make a best interest determination, but basically, unless you can show that the parent that the child is electing to live with is just really not a good idea for them, most of the time the court's going to honor that child's wishes.
There's still an idea, though, just of custodial rights about, okay, I'll go see that parent on weekends occasionally or on holidays and still just want to live with this parent?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, from the standpoint of how busy is the Superior Court now? Because I'm wondering, you know, the number of cases you'd be seeing here in the area.
It's very busy. I looked up the numbers through the clerk's office, and it's about 500 cases a year.
Wow.
Now, that's a little different in state court, because in state court, the case counts are really high. Because, I mean, I don't know about you, but I've gotten a speeding ticket before. And so, you know, usually when you do that, you might just pay the ticket. Or if you get a seatbelt violation mm-hmm. or something like that, you just pay it. You never actually go to court. But each one of those citations is given a number. So, like, for example, it might be thousands of cases in the state court, but most of those don't actually come into the courtroom. They're usually closed through the clerk's office or paid online or something of that nature. Every single case in Superior Court comes before a judge. We don't have anything that you can just pay and go.
From the standpoint there, is the judge real autonomous what goes on with the system, or are you working closely with the clerk and with the administration there in the system?
So I think our Superior Court judges work really well in regards to covering for each other if one of them needs to be out or something of that nature. They also have a lot of support judges. So there's three of us or four of us actually in Magistrate Court who sometimes sit in Superior Court, two of us more regularly than the other two. And then there's four Juvenile Court judges who regularly sit in Superior Court. All of that is a support role for the Superior Court judges, because let's just say you're doing a murder trial. I know Judge Oliver's doing one with this week. Well, that she's taken up her entire week with that murder trial.
Oh, sure.
So I did a domestic calendar yesterday where I handled temporary protective orders, and I did a domestic calendar for Judge Deal while he was in Dawson County handling drug court. So it's not that we're covering for them while they're off. We're covering for them to help them with their caseload. It's interesting. I've looked at the last 7 years, well, since 2017, and on the cases in Superior Court, and each year every judge has closed more cases than they were assigned. So they're not on a backlog based upon the case numbers and the clerk's office.
That's a great point right there, is about the caseload you have, and is there a backlog from that standpoint?
So I haven't, I'm not privy to the number of unindicted cases in Superior Court. There's a little difference in how state court runs versus Superior Court. So in mm-hmm. state court, we have the solicitor's office, and the solicitor's office draws an accusation or the citation is filed. That's what starts the case. And then once that's filed in the clerk's office, then the judge has jurisdiction over that to put it on a calendar and kind of move it forward from there. In Superior Court, most cases have to be indicted by the grand jury. And then the court doesn't have any control over that case until the DA's office has presented that to the grand jury. The grand jury has returned the indictment, and the indictment is filed in the clerk's office. So I don't know exactly how many unindicted cases there are in the DA's office. I just don't know that number. But I know that from the cases that are filed, Superior Court is keeping up with the pace.
So you're keeping up with the grand jury then. And they meet how often?
Once a month, I believe.
Okay, so then how much work does it take for you as a judge looking to become a Superior Court judge when it comes to knowing the background of those cases? Or are you just there litigating what the lawyers, the information they give to you from that standpoint?
I really don't know anything until I sit down in that chair and start listening, because we're not supposed to hear anything first or get any kind of information before we're listening or anything like that. So I really just sit in the courtroom and listen to the evidence as it's presented.
Wow. And so you're there working with the whole tempo of the case, trying to do the best thing you can, working with the law that you have, then present it to a jury, right?
Yes, that's it. And I had a lot of training in that because I was a trial lawyer for 16 years, so I know what it takes to prepare a case and to present a case. And so that helps me a lot in listening to other lawyers present their cases.
So tell me about, for example, with lawyers, the relationship you have with a judge and how that works. If that's good, bad, or ugly from that standpoint?
I think it's a good thing. We have a really great active local bar. We just had our Law Day luncheon yesterday. And so it's kind of I don't want to call it a family, but it's kind of a family. I mean, we all see each other a lot. We're mm-hmm. all friendly with one another, which really lends to a lot of professionalism in the courtroom. People treat each other nicely. You know, those kinds of things. You notice a lot as a judge. I notice it more as a judge than I did as a lawyer, that when someone comes in from outside the jurisdiction, they may not be as nice to a local person as some other local person would. So I think it's a good thing that the local bar knows each other and gets along well. It also is it makes it easier for the judges, because we don't have to deal with all the infighting between the lawyers and things of that nature. We can just hear the facts and decide on the facts instead of all the emotions involved.
With that too, are most of the cases going to a jury, or are they maybe settled by what a judge does with the information and the evidence you're presented from that standpoint?
I would say that the vast majority of cases are closed without a jury. Jury trials, I mean, yeah, they happen, and you're certainly entitled to a jury trial, but the vast majority of them don't close by jury.
How difficult is also looking at seating a jury from the pool that we have now?
Well, that depends on what kind of case it is and how many people you call in and how much press there's been and those kinds of things. I mean, sometimes you have to call in, 60, 80, 100 people for one case to try to get 12 people that don't know about it and all of those kinds of things.
So look at all the different aspects of working as a judge. You talked about your background and your ideas from this standpoint. So tell me about really the main goal of you wanting to become the Superior Court judge.
So I want to maintain the standard that we've built here. The judges that have come before me are giants in their field. And so I just want to step onto that team and be a team player. I want to support them in any way that I can, because I know that they'll do the same for me. I want to continue all the good work that Judge Goslin has started. She created Help Court, which is for individuals who've been arrested and they have a mental health diagnosis. And so that's another accountability court, which is a model court here. I want to continue that program and I want to grow it. I want to get community mentors and community partners that will come in and stand beside the participants and help them in any way that they can. I also want to make sure that Veterans Court continues. That was a program that went out of state court when Judge Roberts retired last year. And so now it's being presided over by Judge Steele. I haven't spoken with him to see if he would let me take it, because I'm not trying to put the cart before the horse, but that's something that I'm definitely interested in. I had family members. My grandfather served in World War II in the Air Force. My stepfather served in Vietnam in the Marines. And my father was in, he's a little bit younger. So he was in the Air Force Reserves. So we need to take care of our veterans. And we need to respect them and give them all the rights that we can. And so, you know, there was a gentleman who was here who was being taken into custody on what's called a 1013, where a doctor or two doctors had found him to be a danger to himself or others. And so when law enforcement went to take him to the hospital, he was not in a good place. And so he made some threats against those officers and things of that nature. And then it wound up with him getting arrested. He was put into the Veterans Court program when Judge Roberts was here and was assigned a mentor who, I'm just going to name him, Chief Hulsey from Flowery Branch Police Department, who mm-hmm. served in the armed forces. And so instead of that gentleman who was only trying to get mental health treatment and then got into a really bad situation, instead of him having a felony on his record, instead they got him into a treatment program in Texas. Chief Hulsey flew out there with him and he's doing great. And so that's a better result to me. That's something that we deserve that our veterans deserve for us to provide to them rather than just punishment.
Judge, I was totally unaware of that court. Mm-hmm. I have a friend who his husband was in a similar situation with PTSD yes. from the Gulf War and had to go to that place in Texas. It is a yeah. phenomenal place.
It absolutely is.
So in the last couple of minutes of our program, how about talking to our listeners directly and tell them why they should be voting for Michelle Hall?
So you should vote for me because I have the experience to start on day one. You don't have to train me. You don't have to spend your tax dollars getting me ready for the job. I've been doing this job for 3 years. Before then, I practiced in this court for 16 years. And so I know how this works. You don't have to have me get ready. I'm ready to go on day one. And so I say the right experience makes all the difference, and that's the difference in the candidates in this position.
How long is the term, and would you be up for re-election and that works with being a judge?
Yes, it's 4 years. I would take office on January 1st of 2025 and then run for re-election in 2028.
All right. Thank you so much for your time. I really learned a lot this morning. I appreciate you being with us this morning.
All right. Thank you so much.
That is Judge Michelle Hall, who's looking to become Superior Court Judge. Her opponent, Judge John Brakefield, will join us tomorrow morning. We'll hear about why he wants to become Superior Court Judge. That's tomorrow morning here on 97.5 Glory FM as we bring you the information you need for you and your family on a glorious Thursday morning in North Georgia.